Okay, everyone. So, let's get started.
Yeah.
And as always, I'll just say a few words first of all, and we'll try to put it into practice afterwards. And as always, one of the most one of the critical things that make meditation work is the attitude that we have during meditation, that we have a wholesome mind state. And this is one of those things that is so important to establish at the beginning of the meditation. It's always a certain sequence to things. You allow things to become relatively peaceful, and then make sure as you go along, once the degree of peace has been achieved, to make sure that you have a kind of positive state of mind. And there's a number of ways that this is described by the Buddha, how to do this. And one of the ways of doing it, this is actually not directly mentioned in the suttas, but one of the ways of doing this is to have a sense of gratitude. Because gratitude is a very powerful emotion, and when you feel grateful for something, you certainly don't have any negative thoughts. In fact, gratitude is often very closely connected with the idea of metta, of loving kindness and compassion, and all these positive qualities. When you are grateful to someone, you also see their good qualities. And when you see their good qualities, you also tend to have a lot of goodwill and metta, basically. All of these things coming together. And when you are a member or a part of, if not official member, at least a part of a spiritual group like the BSWA, then there is a lot to be grateful for, especially at the time when the world is in a bit of turmoil. It's one of the fascinating things about the world being in turmoil, it gives much more value to the spiritual path, because you understand that the world is no refuge anymore. You cannot take refuge in that world, because the world is always going to be unreliable, unpredictable. And if you take refuge in that, meaning that you have expectations for how the world will go, you're always going to be disappointed. So you come to the spiritual practice, and it becomes so grateful for having this alternative, having this opportunity to do something where you, instead of developing the world outside, you develop the inner world instead. You have another place you can go and do something. So you feel grateful, first of all, for the existence of the Buddha Society, all the pioneers, all the people who established this, who built it up over a period of, it's been around now for close to 50 years since the Buddha Society was established. And all the hard work that has gone into this, and this large group of lay people that are part of this Buddha Society. And I was talking yesterday about the lay people being two of the four pillars, four assemblies of Buddhism, that the lay people are just as indispensable for Buddhism to work as the monastics are. Without the lay people, there wouldn't be any Buddhism, basically. All of these four pillars are required to have a complete Buddhist philosophy or teaching, or whatever you want to call it. So, and when you look at this diverse group of lay people that we have there, everyone working together, and many people having lots of good qualities. It's amazing when you are a monk and you know so many of the people in this Buddha society. It's amazing how many good qualities there are to be found in these people. And sometimes just thinking about it makes you joyful, that there are all these good qualities there. People with incredible generosity, people who are always kind and caring, people who put in a lot of service for others, people who get really good meditation. Yeah, and you are part of this group. You're part of this strong support network. Everyone pulling in the same direction. These are your kalyanamittas, your spiritual friends, and help you also. It's like you just get into the slipstream of everyone else, and you kind of get dragged along almost. It's kind of one of the Ajahn Rama's idea of Buddhism, working by osmosis. You just have to be there, and you kind of absorb the vibes of everything else. So what a wonderful thing it is to be part of that. So you can have a sense of gratitude for your kalyanamittas and your good friends on this path. Of course, then there is the monastic community who often, have kind of also have a kind of obviously central part of the Buddha Society as well. People like Ajahn Brahm, who's put in so much incredible hard work, and with the nuns' monastery coming up, and a lot of people putting a lot of dedicated effort into practicing welfare. And what a wonderful thing that is, when we can work together as both lay Buddhist and monastic Buddhist in this way. And finally, of course, the Buddha himself, and the fact that we still have in the present day, after 2,500 years, we still have these incredibly powerful spiritual teachings that the Buddha bequeathed to us 2,500 years ago. What an amazing thing that is, that these teachings have been cared for, looked after for 2,500 years, passed down from generation to generation, from one culture to the next one, and so that we have it now in the present day in beautiful English translation, in fact in translations in many, many different languages, and they are there. They come originally from this man in ancient India who is now known as the Buddha, the spiritual genius, and now we still have these teachings in the present day. So when you reflect on all that, there's so much to be grateful for, and especially at the time when the world seems to be going somewhere, you know, in a slightly strange direction sometimes. I don't know if that is your perception, but if it is, then you can use that perception to feel an extra sense of gratitude for having these wonderful, amazing teachings and all the things that come with it. So see if you can bring up a little bit of that sense of gratitude and appreciation of all the good things in your life, to count your blessings if you like, and it becomes a powerful antidote to any negative mind states, and it builds up a sense of kindness and friendship with everyone around you at the same time. Okay, so let's now try to put this into practice. So, as usual, find a nice, comfortable position for yourself, and let's get started. And as always, make sure you take plenty of time to begin with, just to relax properly, to make sure that you are really at ease. As always, it is the idea of just being patient and allowing things to settle down is one of the most important things in meditation practice. Once you lose your patience, you're already kind of heading on the wrong track. So just sitting back, allowing things to settle down, just enjoying the idea of being peaceful and doing absolutely nothing here. And please just go with the flow of things, allowing things to be, letting be for the purpose of letting go. And as you go with the flow of things, you will feel the peace that actually is available right here in the present moment. So notice that peace. Notice that this is a peace that you find in a place which is a spiritual sanctuary, like the Dhammaloka Center. And then you can also feel a sense of gratitude that you are part of this. You have this ability to come here and found some real depth and profundity and meaning in life. What a wonderful thing that is. In this way, you can feel, build up some positive emotions. And if you do need more encouragement and more positivity as you go along, just again remind yourself of this wonderful fact of this ancient Buddhist spiritual practice of which you are part. And so much goodness, so much care, so many good things that have gone into this over such a long period of time, and even in the present day. And what a wonderful thing that is. And in this way, if you're able to bring up that sense of gratitude for this enormous thing that you are part of, and how it lifts it all up and brings us forward. And when you do this, make sure you do it very gently. It's almost as if you're just turning your mind, your perception towards these things, and just allowing that inspiration to flow. There's not much thinking involved or much movement involved. It's almost something you can do along with watching the breath and building up the breath in a beautiful state of mind at the same time. Okay, so we're now coming close to the end of the meditation. And before we come to the very end, it is advise you to review your meditation just for a few moments and just to ask yourself, how do you feel now? And if you feel more at ease, more at peace, better in any way, then ask yourself why that is the case. How have you developed this meditation? What are the perceptions you have brought up? What are the things you have let go of? And how does this path actually work? Okay, is there any questions? Anyone want to say anything? Everyone quite happy? Okay, great. So let's take, is there any questions from outside? Okay, great, thank you. Excellent. Okay, so three questions from outside of here. One is from Chris in Canada. And the question is as follows. I find peace in meditation, but it disappears quickly after that. My depression became worse after meditation, losing a sense of joy and refuge. How can I maintain joy in troubled times? Well, if you suffer from depression, it is difficult to find joy because depression is almost like the opposite of joy. It is actually perceiving the negative in things. That's why you get depressed. So you can't really expect to find joy when you have depression. What you can expect to find is a little bit of peace, a little bit of removal from the problems that that give rise to the depression in a sense. The mind, which is always churning on, always kind of reinforcing the negative states, you can find a bit of relief and respite from that. And that is already very useful. So it is one of the areas where meditation is very useful. It gives you that sense of rest and giving yourself a sense of peace and moving a little bit away from the meditation practice, from the depression. But in the long run, the way to overcome depression is to kind of rethink, to reprogram your mind, to look at things in a different way. The reason why people get depressed is often they feel a bit hopeless or they feel the world is hopeless. So you need to see the good things in yourself. You need to rejoice in the positive things in your life. You need to see that actually a lot of things are probably going right. Everything isn't as bad as you think it is. So that reprogramming of the mind, learning to see the goodness in yourself and rejoicing in that is a large part of overcoming any depression and problems. So it's more like, you can't really overcome it fully by meditation practice. You also need to reflect and learn how to reflect wisely to overcome things like depression. And that is really such an important part of it. And it's, I think, one of the things that is often underestimated, the power of reflection on the Buddhist path. Thinking about things in the right way is so much about what the Buddhist path is about. And meditation is actually an outcome of that appropriate reflection, if you want to take it deep and you want to achieve joy specifically. Okay, this is from Y in Canada, is that right? Y Canada, okay. Dem Ajahn Brahm Marley, can you talk about using kasina as a meditation object and why they aren't widely taught? Can I talk about it? The reason why, let's take the second question first, why they're not widely taught. And the reason they're not widely taught is because the Buddha doesn't really teach kasina meditation very much. If you look at the suttas, they are mentioned as part of like a list, the list of the 10 different kasina objects. Kasina means something like totality, that's kind of the meaning of that. And because it isn't really taught by the Buddha, I don't recommend following teachings that aren't essential or core aspects of the Buddhist teachings. The most important meditation object in the suttas, I would say, is mindfulness of breathing. And because of that, I'd like to focus on those core aspects of what the Buddha taught in the sutta, simply because you feel that you're on safe ground when you do that. You can try kasina meditation, and kasina basically just means it's very similar to mindfulness of breathing or any meditation object, in the sense that what you really need is the ability to focus on something here. So kasina is like focusing on an object that is very pure or unified, an object which has a very kind of uniform color or shape. So for example, you're talking about the earth kasina, and it's just, some people like to make up a plate of earth. It has to be very kind of a round circle of earth, and then has to be very uniform, so there's no distractions in that color, and they just focus on that until it leaves a mental image in your mind. That's really all it is about. You don't have to have a physical color of earth or a physical object. You can just also imagine it in your mind if you have that ability to imagine things. Or it can just be a colored circle. Yeah, that's basically what it is. I think if you have the ability to focus on anything, you should also be able to focus on kasinas as well. But precisely because it is the ability to focus which really is the critical one, it doesn't matter so much what you are focusing on. And that's why I would really just recommend you to come back to the breath. If you can do kasinas, you can do the breath. If you can do the breath, you can do kasinas. These are just applying the qualities of the mind to different areas really here. So the most important thing in meditation practice is the foundations that you put in, that you put in enough effort into kindness, into sila, into virtue, into compassion, into all of these daily activities. And if you put effort into that, then your meditation comes together. This is by far the most important thing for meditation practice to work out. And this is what the Buddha says everywhere in the suttas. It absolutely permeates the suttas. Okay, this is from W in Victoria. Dear Ajahn Brahm Marley, sometimes I see purple flame going around during meditation. Sometimes the color changes to green and yellow. Can you advise on what is going on? What is going on is simply that when your mind becomes... Some people have very naturally visual minds, so people see all kind of things. I don't know if you have a very visual mind, but some people see all kind of things even if they don't meditate because of the visualness of the mind. But the more still the mind becomes, the more powerful that visualization of the mind also tends to become. So it's a very common thing that when people become a little bit peaceful, and the deeper that peace is, the more kind of strange things they experience as a consequence. People can have all kinds of weird things happening in meditation. Everybody wants to know what it means. Well, it doesn't mean very much. Why? Because it's just the mind fabricating stuff. The mind likes to be creative. The mind likes to fabricate. So it's kind of irrelevant because it is a fabrication. It's not reality. It doesn't mean anything. It just is a confabulations of the mental world. So just leave it to one side. Don't worry about it too much. If you enjoy it a little bit, enjoy it a little bit if you like it. But then come back to the meditation object. Come back to the breath and take it deeper. And if it often is a good sign, because it means that your mind is becoming a little bit peaceful, but it's only a beginning. Yeah, it's only a starting point. Take it deeper and become fully still and fully peaceful. That's really the right way to go. Okay. So that is all for now. So let's just pay respect to the Buddha Dhamma Sangha.